Blog Talk Radio.
The Blue Curtain, Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern. Viewer discretion is advised.
All right. Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Behind the Blue Curtain. I'm your host, Sam Mason. All right. We're going to go in today on the topic, but before we do that, we got to say good morning. Big John's going to be joining us a little later. He's running behind, but we've got a special guest, and I love good people. I just love something about good people that believe in what they do, and I called her last minute and said, hey, this is what I want to do. I need you. You're like my expert on this. I need you here. And she's in Vegas on vacation and said, oh, yeah, I'm there. Wasn't no convincing. Wasn't no long talk. Yeah, oh, yeah, I'm there. This topic, I'm there. So before we get to her, we're going to say good morning to everybody. I don't know where Joe went. His box is up there, but Joe didn't fade to black. You know, what's up, Chief?
Well.
Well, we can't see.
He's there.
He's there in theory. What's going on, Chief?
Nothing busy. Well, say nothing a lot, but busy week. You know, we're getting towards the holiday season. We're getting close to it. And just busy. You know, see people out there, just be nice to them. Come on.
Yeah.
Everybody's got something going on. But it's been a busy week for me, not only professionally, but, you know, we've been taking care of business for our Blue Santa program. That has gone fantastic. So there are a bunch of families that we're going to be able to help out this year and make them have a good Christmas, have the kids have a good Christmas this year. But just be nice to people. Come on. Be nice.
At least one day, 24 hours, right?
Right.
And if that's... And if that seems like a lot, just go a 12-hour shift twice, and let's get through it. You know, let me go. What's up, Joe?
What's up, man?
Well, we don't...
Having a little technical difficulty, but I'll be all right.
Okay, well, we're glad to hear anyway, and John will be in later, but I got to drop down to this lady here. Dr. Behavior. And before we get into this, I'm gonna introduce her. Izzy's up in the house. All right, Izzy, we'll get to you in a second. Corsi, Dr. Cruz, I didn't got all, like, personal, like, we like that. Dr. Cruz, you know.
How are you?
I'm good. Tell me about Vegas, first off. How's everything? What'd you do?
We went to Bruno. We went to go see Bruno Mars last night. So my sister and I went, and just, it was amazing. Yeah, we had a great time. So I think we got home last night around 12:30 or 1, and we're back up and at them. So I'm glad to be here. Thank you.
Oh, we appreciate you being here. Let me drop down. Izzy, what's up, man?
Morning, all. Doing good. Happy to be here. Wish I was at a Bruno Mars concert last night.
You should have been. It was amazing. He took our phones away from us.
What?
So he locked them up in the little cases. So as soon as you hit the venue, you were done with your phone. It was really nice, honestly. It's the first time in a really long time you have that many people together that don't have cell phones out, you know? And it's like we all just enjoyed the moment. It was really nice. I think that made it even better, honestly, that I didn't have my phone.
How are your seats?
Amazing. We were okay. Yeah, we were okay. It was worth every penny. It was worth every penny. We had a great time.
Nice.
All right. Well, Big Joe, oh, wow, we got another guest that decided to finally get here. You know, when folks can't show up on time, this is not a Baptist church thing where you just get here when you get here. Good morning, Travis Evans, host of The Point. Good morning. Glad you could join us.
Good morning. Sorry about that, man. I got
had a little incident with the dealership about my vehicle. So took a few extra minutes, and I'm sorry for being late. So let's go.
That's what happens when you buy a Bentley. All right. We're going to, Big Joe, we got your intro in. We're going to go ahead and we're going to get started on today's topic. And this is, y'all strap in for a minute. Let me see.
A Michigan school district on edge. Oxford Community Schools canceling classes once again today after receiving what officials called an image from social media that included a specific threat. It comes just 2 weeks after that mass shooting at the high school. 15-year-old suspect Ethan Crumbly appearing remotely in court Monday, charged as an adult, accused of murdering four of his classmates and wounding seven others.
This image, one that has become all too familiar, students evacuating with their hands up. The suspect in that deadly shooting is now in custody. New images this morning showing him being taken to jail. Hey, good afternoon. We interrupt regular programming to bring you breaking news out of Texas, and it is horrific news. ABC News learning at least 18 people have died and dozens injured in that mass shooting at a shopping complex in El Paso. This according to law enforcement officials. This is now one of the top 10 deadliest mass shootings in U.S. history.
And first to tragedy in Indianapolis, a gunman opened fire and killed 8 people at a FedEx facility near the airport there. At least 4 people were sent to the hospital with injuries. Police say the shooter killed himself, and they are trying to figure out what led up to the shooting.
New surveillance video captures bystanders outside a rap concert. At the same moment, the doors of this SUV fly open and 3 gunmen approach. Seconds later, the crowd scrambles to take cover, and lives are changed forever.
Now, according to our count, just once again recapping those numbers, since Friday night, 85 shootings, 14 homicides here in the city of Chicago. Chicago police, though, won't officially release their numbers on the shootings and murders until later this week, since they're still investigating right now and adding all of that up. The Chicago Police Department also says those 2 officers are expected to be okay.
All right, let's go ahead and get into it. This is crazy. America has officially become a third world country. What we used to hear about that was happening in some long Middle Eastern name country that we couldn't even pronounce correctly, and we used to say, thank God I don't live there. Well, welcome to there. We are now where there is. I'm going to step up top right now to the guest, Dr. Behavior, because Lord knows, baby, we off the chain. Come on, Dr. Cruz, bring it.
It's so multifaceted. We talked the other day when you called me about this, and when you said, what are your views about this, I said, where is the village? And that's going to be my theme today, is where is the village? And when I say the village, I mean everybody. It's not one person, one role, one administrator, one school board, one parent, it's everybody. Working in education and working with kids for 22 years, you know when people are unstable. You know when people are unstable, I'm sorry. You know when things have been happening and someone is feeling helpless. As a teacher, I know the kids who get picked on. It's my job to stand up for them. And what I've experienced as educators is that educators don't always feel comfortable stepping in to do that. And every time I hear these bully reasons, right, why somebody brought a gun and brought it to school, I always go back to who knew. And it's not to blame anyone. It's to try to get ahead of this stuff. It's not about blaming. It's about being able to identify that there's a problem and that somebody needs that support. We see it happening. Everyone knows it. Everybody's like, oh, yeah, he's been getting bullied for years. He's been getting picked on for years. this is so multifaceted. I could go at this from about 9 different angles. So we'll take it however which way y'all want to go, and we'll talk about it. But, you know, as an educator, most recently I just came out of the classroom. It's my responsibility to keep my classroom safe. And if there are things that are going on inside that classroom, it's my job to report it, to get support, to do what it needs to help. And when that stuff happens, we avoid big issues. It's just what happens. When you give people support who don't feel support, they don't have to continue to act out. And I'm not blaming anyone. Hear me very clearly. But when people lack coping strategies, these are the types of situations that you get. And this is from adults on down. That YouTube that you showed us with school shootings onto FedEx, onto everywhere. It's not just children. It's not just adults, y'all. We have a major problem, and it's so multifaceted. We just have to unpack it.
Amen. Let me go now. Chief, you're out there. You're seeing this. You're training on it. You're teaching kids in the academy who can't really wrap their head around it other than videos they see. And they're walking into a profession where you now become that person that has to go down that hall with limited information.
I mean, first off, I owe quite a bit of money to the swear jar. I was on mute, so you didn't hear it. But as soon as you started playing that video, because the word social media came up and that prompted. But like Dr. Crew said, and this thing needs to be approached from multiple angles. So I'm gonna do it from the professional law enforcement perspective. But and you're right. Not only are we teaching the academy cadets how to deal with this. And let me take it back. You know, Stan, when you and I started in this business, and Joe, this was not a thing. We didn't learn this in the academy. There was no such thing as active attack or active shooter, right? This is something that came along in our careers, prompted by Columbine. Sure, there were mass shootings before, but prompted by Columbine. So that's where we begin this training to deal with these types of incidents. So from the operator level, from our perspective, you know, there's a certain response to that type of incident. But like Dr. Crew said, where's the village? I teach this. I teach alert, which is that the response to active shooter active attacks. I'm an instructor, been an instructor for many years of that. I also teach civilian response to active shooter. So if you're caught up in one of these things as a civilian, how to react to things that happen, psychological, physiological changes that take place, and how to get yourself out safe. But in that training, in that research that I've done, there is always some type of broadcast of these events. That means they've posted on social media, they've told somebody about it. Somebody knows that these things are going to happen. May not be specifically, but there's some type of broadcast there. And I'm pretty sure Izzy has some, you know, I mean, he's the media. Who do they find? They always find somebody. Yeah, you know, just as Dr. Cruz said, yeah, they bullied him for 10 years, right? We always seem to find that person. So these are very dangerous events. I don't look for them to go away anytime soon. So we have to be prepared to deal with these. Now, while we're preparing to deal with them, there needs to be some serious intervention with a lot of these people. But the problem with that is the system across the country mm-hmm. is broken.
Mm-hmm.
And so when you start talking about intervention, mental health, counseling, man, we need to do some serious work in this country, in the country, to get that fixed, because I don't know where it is good. I haven't found the place yet, because if I could find it, I want to copy it and bring it back to my place. But that right there becomes the whole nother. That's a whole nother 2-3 shows we could talk about that. But these are going to happen, and I'm going to go. I'll just put it out there. If you have an agency anywhere around that teaches civilian response to active shooter, go take that class. Go take it, because odds are at some point in time in life, you're going to get caught up in one of these, and you need to know how to get out of it, protect you, your family, and anybody else that may be around with you. Get out of this situation and live for another day.
Amen, bro.
I got way much more to say, but I'm gonna shut up.
Oh well, because we're gonna unpack this as we always do, and we got a long way to go in this one. We're just scratching the surface. This is the woosaw moment for folks to kind of get settled in, because it's not gonna be what you may think it may be. You're gonna get it straight, no chaser, raw and uncut here. You know, so you know, let folks just strap in. Izzy, I see you thinking and you're writing. looking studious. Come on, brother, what you thinking?
Oh, man. I mean, what everybody's saying is exactly correct. I think one thing that should be noted, which is crazy to me, is the fact that homicides are up, but overall crime is still lower than it's been, than it was in its peak in the 80s and 90s, which is insane to me. I think that as long as we keep stigmatizing mental illness and mocking mental wellness, we're not going to get any improvement on this, because I think that stigmatization and that mockery leads to the situation as it is. Because even when the system was, quote-unquote, possibly working the way it was supposed to be, it was still a reactive system. It wasn't proactive. It wasn't interventionist, as everybody's saying. But like, so many of our systems, even when they function the way they're supposed to, are reactive to the problem, and we're not doing anything to cut it off at the root, so to speak. Meanwhile, we're just cutting things. We're cutting social. If you keep cutting social services, if you keep cutting all community programs, if you keep making cuts to education, if you keep doing all of these things, we're going to run into these problems more and more and more, not just because it produces them, but because it doesn't know how to handle or cope or deal with the situation as it exists. It's a very frustrating problem. And I mean, another thing to talk about is the fact that the media, in certain degrees, kind of exacerbates and dramatizes and explodes the whole situation, so you can't have real conversations on it. All you're doing is focusing on the chaos and the pain and the death and everything, but no one's having like real conversations about how to do it, how to do anything. Like I got invited to have a conversation with some other people about why the homicide rates are up. But like, most of the conversation immediately goes to, oh, we need more police, or we need more enforcement, we need more penalization, we're letting criminals out too much. There was no conversation about why aren't we talking about why we're cutting social services, cutting health care, cutting education, and the effect that has on us as a society.
You know, Ed, I'm glad you went there, because now we're going to go in. You know, from my perspective of this show, when I thought about, you know, the topic and what I wanted to do, I look at all this stuff we have today. We've got computers, we've got drones, we've got cell phones, we've got technology, we've got all this new age stuff. It's everywhere to deal with this problem. But at my age, let's go. I want to rewind back to the 70s. You know, Dr. Cruz mentioned the village. I want to go back there, because I'm a byproduct of that village. The chief is a byproduct of that village. Dr. Cruz is a byproduct of that village. Joe is. You know, we had less resources. We had less electronic devices and cute toys to do all this quick stuff for us. But let me tell you what we had back then. We had a middle class that took care of their neighbor. You could walk into anybody's house and take a cookie off the stove, and the only thing you were met with was wash your hands. You knew everybody in your neighborhood. They knew you, black, white, Mexican, Italian. It didn't matter. You knew them. You all played together. You fought together. You made up together. You did sleepovers, you know. This is when the church was open every day. You could walk to that corner church, and you knew the church because everybody in the neighborhood went to that church. You could go there, and the church would have lunch, and you had workers who would go there and eat lunch at the church and have fellowship or whatever. You had YMCAs that were open. You had a strong power program. You had police officers who were given the time to get out of the car and walk. And guess what? They were killing people in the 70s. Oh, yeah, we were. All this stuff today is not new. We were killing people in the 70s. We were selling drugs in the 70s. It was going on. But our American approach to the problem was, this is a people problem. We didn't have for-profit prisons in the 70s. So we didn't have rich folks who invested in prisons who made money off of sicking the police on poor people to put them in jail. We had social programs that actually worked because they met with people. We had this thing called just an example, the bookmobile. I don't know if it was everywhere. There was a big band that had books that rode into the neighborhood. And you paid 5 cents, 10 cents, 25 cents, and you got a book to read it. You own that book. And to be a child, just owning a book, it was yours. You're in school where you borrow books and you turn them in at the end of the year, but this one was yours. All these things we did in the 70s that worked are all of a sudden have gone by the wayside in the interest of, to me, marketing, gentrification, political aspirations. And when I talk about the police, I'm not a chief. I'm not qualified to talk up on that level. But for the men and women on the street, they have been used as strong-arm pawns to line the pockets of a lot of other people. And I'm not making this all about policing because there's a lot of entities to come in. But Dr. Cruz, just give me, what is your, I mean, you're out there. You see this thing from so many different levels. Can you help me understand, maybe, if I'm wrong, let me know.
I'll give you an interesting fact. Did y'all know that teachers aren't taught classroom management?
I knew that.
They're not taught. They're not taught how to manage a classroom. They're not taught. They only get theory in whatever program they take. I did an emergency certification program, which is what most teachers now are coming into. Very few are in traditional programs anymore. And even those programs are changing now because of COVID and all of those things. You don't get your full student teaching and all of the things that, you know, we normally would have gotten where we get that on-the-job training, right? That's the whole student teaching part, is that you get on-the-job training so you can learn from people who actually know what they're doing. Problem is, we don't train anybody on classroom management. I worked at the alternative school, and my job, I was going to come in, I was going to change these kids, right? And I did. Day and a half of strategy training, these kids are rocking and rolling, right? I give them 2-3 weeks. I have them. I send them back to their campus, and they're back to me in 2 days.
You know
why? Because I never taught the teacher. That's why. I trained the kid on what the kid needed, but the teacher didn't have what he or she needed to be able to handle and manage 26 of these. And let me preface this, because I'm tough on teachers because I am one. But I also need to say, if y'all even could gander at what we have in these classrooms, these kids that have significant issues that have not been diagnosed, child find is a real thing. Child find helps us identify kids that have special education needs, and we need to do it. But many of our districts don't. Because there was some arbitrary 8% rule that said a normal population in a school shouldn't have more than 8% special education. In what world? Who decided that? And so what happened was, instead of just identifying the kids who needed to be special education because of accountability testing and those sorts of things, we weren't getting credit for those testings. We were getting knocked for special education. So guess what? Rather than saying these kids need help and we need to support them and we need to identify them, we just stopped identifying them because that would make too many numbers.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I don't know if y'all understand. I've been an administrator. I was an administrator before I was a teacher. I did everything backwards. I taught collegiately, then I came into the school as an administrator, and then I became a teacher because I realized very quickly I need to be trained how they're trained so I know how to fix it. Because as an administrator, I'm like, how do you not know how to talk to kids? Oh, nobody ever taught you. No one teaches teachers how to correct children. You are left to whatever you bring in that classroom with you every single day, including your stress, your frustrations, all the things that make us human. And most teachers are women, especially elementary level. So you've got female on top of being a mother, on top of being all of those caregivers. There was a statement one time, and I completely agree with it. It said that teachers make more decisions per day than brain surgeons. This is what I used to tell people. I was a single mom at a 25 kids, and my baby daddy did nothing to help me, right? Because when you are a teacher and you're in the classroom, you are as good as your skills. And if you don't have the skills, then we will lean on your authority. And when you lean on your authority, you forego relationships and connections. Dan, you know my book's all about connection. That's what I'm writing on right now, connection. Mm-hmm. We're losing it. But it's not because people don't want to. I think it's because people don't know how to. Because when I do simple trainings on high structure, high nurture, that's all I do is high structure, high nurture. I can teach you increase your rules, you increase your nurture. You don't decrease either. You will just increase. When you do that, people feel safe and they'll learn. Adults and children alike. It's very simple, but who teaches that? What administrators coming in and actually model teaching in a classroom? I don't know how many teachers are watching us, but y'all feel free to throw that in the chat. When's the last time an administrator came and took over your unruly classroom and showed you how to do it? I did, but not everybody does that. So when we come from a classroom standpoint, your front line is your teacher and then your administrator. And if neither one of them know how to deal with behavior, as most people don't, this is why we're running them up. This is why the children are running the schools, because you have adults who are afraid to correct them.
You know, that
it's only gotten worse, Sean. 22 years of doing this, I've never seen this many adults scared to correct children.
You know, let me say, which everything you just said, I can transfer from my experience into policing. Everything you just said, I just have to substitute titles and names. You know, there are some chiefs who yeah, they're a chief. And people automatically assume this guy or woman did 10 or 15 years on the street and became a chief. I know personally that they will groom certain people for positions and hide them behind a desk and ego stroke them and book smart prepare them, and now they become the chief over a department. And within departments, I've never been on SWAT, never been a detective. I can't speak to all that. That's why I have Joe here. But I can talk about the men and women who take the hard hits and the brunt of every failed policy. That is the street officer. The men and women busting their ass out there every single day, who most, not all, most by and large believe in the concept construct of community policing, because it's natural behavior to do so. This is not a big philosophy that somebody went into a think tank and developed, because we did it in the 60s and 70s. But because of where you have people who, as you just said, administrators, so to speak, that have not been trained or forgotten they've been trained to deal with the problem at ground zero, or be able to understand the actions or inactions of a specific officer dealing with a specific event in a specific location. You know, everything you just said is on point, Joe. Welcome back. Come on, bro.
Well, it's interesting. First of all, good morning, everyone, but let me just say this. Everything that we talk about is actually 3 to 4 different topics. But the first one that I want to start with, let's talk about the school shooters. This comes from another article. School shootings, another form of school violence, not just the school's problem, the law enforcement problem. They involve families, communities. An adolescent comes to school with a collective life experience, both positive and negative. That was written by Louis Freed and Janet Reno. Now, think about that. This is from a school shooter's assessment, written right after Columbine. Nobody took heed. They broke it down to 4 modes, modalities. They laid out a plan. And I can tell you, being a former Chicago police officer, yeah, we have plans as to what officers should do, but they never practice. What Stan just said about, having a plan, get ready for the curse drop. That means shit if you haven't been training for it. you got to be careful with these administrators, because that's exactly the administrator. But more importantly, let me just say this. The past is prologue. For those who don't understand that, it means basically the past provides future reference. And if this article by Reno and Free, again, some people on here don't even know who those two people are. But Tanner Reno and Louis Free, both this, again, we're talking the 80s. And again, it was a playbook. Now, when we take that and combine that into exactly what Dr. Corsi was talking about, we start talking about the adolescent mind, the whole idea of mass shooting, and we start seeing the formulation. But the other problem is this. If we all start thinking that the only tool we have in our toolbox is a hammer, everything we look at is a nail. Okay, guess what? Everything ain't a nail. One size does not fit all. Community policing in Chicago does not work. In Dallas County, it does not work. In Nassau County, how you respond to a school shooting in New York is not necessarily going to be the same as you do in Chicago or even in Dallas. But the problem is that we still not come up with any plan.
And Joe, I would submit that, and this is what I really wish I could get through to the politicians, the power players, the people with money. They're certainly not going to watch this show because they're probably on the golf course right now. But I wish I could get them to understand. We're not searching for some nuanced answer, some new epiphany. We don't need Jesus to come down on a chariot and give us a solution. If we look at history, what worked in – now, here we go. I'm going to go in here, and I'm going to say this. You and I both know, Joe. Gee, you probably got it too, Travis. I know you did and probably deserved it. But when we got out of line in school, your ass got tore from the school to the house. Hello, young people watching today. Guess what? We didn't have this your mile and a half away from school so you get a bus. No. 2.5 miles, Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. Kindergarten, first grade, high school. You walked to school. Somebody walked you or drove you. Okay? And you got it from everybody until you got home. Anybody in that block could tell you. When you got out of line, anybody knew. And this is what that did. When the police came into our community, they automatically knew stay in line because we're going to keep them there like we're keeping our kids there and each other there. When the neighbors two doors down were arguing, one of the men on the block walked out and, hey, man, come on down to the house, have a beer, get away, catch some time out. On my block, and when I say my block, I don't mean a physical one block. I'm talking about 2 or 3 blocks. Everybody voted. Went down to the firehouse and voted. Everybody picked each other up and went down and voted. Somebody made it to the school board meeting. Our church was uptown. It was across town. But if I wanted to know what happened at the city council meeting, or if my parents did, I was a kid, I didn't care. If my parents wanted to know, they could go down to St. Paul, 4 blocks away. They weren't members, or they could sit in there on a Wednesday night where somebody stood up and presented what happened at the school board meeting, what happened at the city council meeting. These are things that worked. They're things we're trying to get back to, but I think we're trying to get back to what has worked with a nuanced, colorful philosophy with a lot of techno gadgets that don't work.
You're right, but I think and, you know, you talked about the politicians coming in. That's the problem. There is not a one shotgun approach to fix this. It's multifaceted, and it's going to take a lot of time to put together to really get it implemented and sink in. And I'm talking, you know, earliest would be a decade, but that's wishful thinking. If you really put forth the effort and put forth the financial portion of it to get some of these programs put back in place. But it's not ever going to happen. I want to kind of go back a little bit to what Dr. Cruz said. And for those of you that don't know, my wife is an educator, 24 years now. And I'm not going to speak to anything about what she does because her job is tough enough. But I think something else that needs to be thrown in is a lot of these districts, kind of like police departments and many organizations, the policies that are in place make some of this stuff happen where educators are not either are afraid to make a decision in dealing with the student or worried about getting in trouble with their bosses for doing that. And again, that's an organizational issue. You see it across a bunch of organizations, specifically in law enforcement. The employees are scared to make an incorrect decision, and then they get hammered by the administration. I think that needs to be thrown in there too, because some of the things, I won't speak about specific that my wife and I speak about, but when she talks about some of the things that she has to do as a result of policies and procedures put forth by the district, I shake my head. Being an administrator, of my own organization, I'm like, what? You don't have to do that. There's no, here's what you do. You just step forward and you take care of this. And I mean, I think that's a major issue that takes place, and it's gotten much worse over the last 2-3 decades, because we talk about, you know, many of us on here, Izzy, you're a little too young to remember, but, you know, I got paddled by a coach because I didn't have my shirt tucked in. Now, that's crazy, and I don't wish that on anybody, but that's when I was in school. Today, that is absolutely 100% unheard of. It is absolutely 100% unheard of, Stan, where you talk about getting your butt whooped by the neighbors as you come walking home for screwing up at school. I got my tail whipped by a neighbor, right? And then they told my parents that they did it. And then I got it from my parents. You know, so that group of people that was watching out for one another, the nuclear family, as you will, that we used to have, is broken apart today by, I think, partially by technology. I mean, what do parents do? You know, they give... it's not showing up, but they give their youngins a phone or an iPad, and you go sit over there, kind of like sometimes with us latchkey kids, because that's who I am. Hey, go sit in front of the TV while I do whatever you need, whatever you get done, or I'm at work. And I think some of that has driven the division that we're talking about amongst the family and amongst the village, because now you're all separate by yourself with your technology. You can sink off into your own little world, and I'm not against technology, but I believe parents and the folks that are in the village need to be mindful of the technology. And the one last thing is that yesterday, apparently there was a national threat on TikTok. There's a TikTok trend, and those are popular. And it was bring your gun and shoot up the school day yesterday on Friday the 17th, right? Mm-hmm. Somehow this thing got thrown across the entire U.S., and I'll tell you, locally, many law enforcement agencies put out notices on their social media, hey, we know this is happening, we're prepared for it, blah, 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 blah. And so that was the trend of the day. But then I saw this post. I saw a post, and it really kind of spoke to me, but it said, you know, we will keep our kids from going to school, but we won't address the issue of TikTok, right, being on the kid's phone. And I thought, you know, that speaks volumes. If we're not parenting our kids and watching out for what they have, then you are not doing what you're supposed to do. I say it almost every time one of these social media trends, something on social media gets out, specifically with the schools, because we are part of our SRO program for our local district. I tell the news, parents, you need to find out what is on your kid's phone, and you need to control it. That's it, bottom line, right? And have these conversations that when this threat does come out from, you know, Michigan, because some knucklehead kid decided that's what he wanted to post, have the discussion with your child. Don't, oh my gosh, it's the school's fault. The school had nothing to do with that. Some individual did it, and you need to address it with your children, because that's the world that we live in today. Right? I mean, and I'm going to shut up.
You know, Chief, I don't know if you all saw this, Trevor. Did you all see this yesterday at 4:30 in the afternoon? There's an article in the Orlando Sentinel. Expelled student of a private school arrested for threatening to shoot the school up.
That was yesterday.
4:30.
That was all day. That was all day. There was a bunch of schools across the country that arrested kids. We had 3 in Georgia.
Now, let's think about this. For the older ones on this tablet, my parents, and here's the thing, the beauty of our parents were, they were not a color, they were parents. My parents, your parents would have beat the bricks off everyone on this table. They'd have beat the dog shit out of them. But instead, and I know he's going to say, well, that wasn't the answer. Well, it was at that time.
What y'all are describing, though, from my perspective, what y'all are describing is structure. When I just talked about high structure, high nurture, whoopings are a part of structure, but you don't have to do corporal punishment to get the same effect. Like in schools, you can have the same, you can get the same effect. And here's my point about all this. Isn't it sad that these children are more willing to be influenced by a TikToker that they've never even met than their family, their administrators, their school, and their community?
But again, you say something very true. And let me, I just have to disprove one part. My parents didn't call it corporal punishment. It was a woman. Let's get that correct. But
if we look at the influence of these TikTokers, you look at the number of murders, and I can address a couple of them, that have been driven by TikTok. If you look at this whole thing of these rappers, these guys are getting killed because of disrespect on TikTok. So if we can take this whole idea of social media and influencers, and again, it's talked about in this paper by Reno and Free, they talked about the media influence 20 years ago. But again, I go back and I digress. The past is prologue. We refuse to listen to our past. That's why we're having problems with the future.
Can I interject something real quick? Stan, I want to reiterate some stuff that you said. And Dr. Cruz, you're on point. But I gotta say this, and please forgive me for the colorful language if I throw any out, but I just gotta say it. Stan's right. We had text messages when I was a kid, and I'm 56 years old. You know what the text message was? It was a little piece of paper, and it said, do you like me? Check yes, check no. And you pass it in the classroom, and you come back. I got a lot of no's, so I'm not really worried about that. But things were simpler back then. There was no devices. There was no electronic devices. Nothing. I don't think we have a telephone. And like Stan said, news spread literally citywide. When you got expelled, if you got in trouble, that was like in the inner city, the big cities. They didn't send letters home and say that you got in trouble at school. They didn't send the letters home. They just simply called. And by the time you got home, everybody in my neighborhood knew I did something that got in trouble. And the village got involved. But today, children can threaten to call 911 on their parents. And that's what this is about. This is people's inability to raise your children. We want to blame the school system. It's the school system. It's the police department. It's everybody else's fault except for the people who possess the penis and the vagina. Now, why do I say that? Because if you look on the wall and see a degree, there's not one for a penis or a vagina. All right. There's not one. They do what they do naturally. They don't have to go to school to do what they do. But it's the idiots that possess those tools. And what they do is that they have these children, they don't know what they're doing, and they expect people like police, school systems, everybody else to help you do something that you created. This boy, Ethan, whatever, probably, he had two parents. And for them to sit there and take lightly the situation that was going on, really there's nothing wrong with Ethan. He got messed up parents. I'm not going to blame the school system. I'm not going to blame the resource officer. I'm not going to blame anybody else other than the two people who laid down one day and decided to create this little monster. They did this. They should be held accountable. They should fix it. If your kid gets kicked out of school for smoking marijuana, he knows smoking marijuana is wrong. He knows it. That's why he went out there in the corner somewhere and did it. That's why he hid in the bathroom. He didn't walk into the administrator's office, in the principal's office, and fire up a blunt. He didn't do that. He hid it, and he got caught. Therefore, the consequences are simple. And when he gets home, as a parent, you have to talk to your children. You got to educate them from the ground up. That's the building process. And we don't have that today because we're so scared that they're going to call 911. They're going to have us arrested. My son tried to press with me when he was 11. He's going to call 911. I gave him a cell phone. Here, take it. Call him. Call him. When you get through that system, if you come out okay, great. If you don't, hey, you ain't got nobody to blame. But I punished my kids
right
accordingly. I did it. I didn't have any issues with anything. Now, this is what we need today. Don't blame TikTok. You need to take your kids off of TikTok because they have a certain type of ability to stick their nose in grown folks' business. Shooting somebody is a grown person situation. Being a mom at 12, you giving your kids the ability to make grown folks' decisions. And then when you want to get mad when it backfires on you. We got to do better as parents.
Yeah.
I'm not blaming the school. I ain't blaming the police. That's all I can say.
Let me grab a caller real quick. We got a caller from the 864 area code, 4276. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, you're in the house. What's up? What you thinking?
Hey, first, Sam, we want to thank you for inviting us. We're listening at your podcast. It's very powerful and moving. I can agree with all the panelists, but there's one thing I want to interject and say. We have failed because we use this statement, I ain't going to raise my children the way that my parents raised me, and that done backfired completely.
Great point. It wasn't all bad. It wasn't all bad. There were pieces of it, but it wasn't all bad. I think it's a great point. And Travis, I'll add to the swear jar. We need to stop being punk-ass adults.
You know what? If you're here right now listening to this show or calling into this show or on this panel, you're only here because somebody set your ass straight years ago. This caller is brilliant. Caller, I'm going to let you finish your point. Thank you. Go ahead. Talk to us. Because you're in the house now.
Are you referring to me, Stan?
Yes, sir. Come on. Because you're bringing some knowledge.
Okay,
so
as I said. Yes, sir. We made the wrong decision when we said we wasn't going to raise our children like our parents raised us, because if we stop and look at who we are a way better person than the way that these children is coming up now. So we made that wrong mistake and that wrong decision. We should raise our children the way our parents raised us. That's all I got to say.
Absolutely, brother. Man, I tell you what, that was a refreshing jewel in light of last week. That's a refreshing jewel. Let me grab another call at 713 area code 2234. Good morning.
Hi, Stan.
How are you?
No, I'm fine. This is Janice Fournier. How are you doing?
I'm doing good. Come on, give us some knowledge because I know you got a whole bucket load.
Oh, yes. Well, I'm a retired campus officer with HISD, and back in that day, it was against the law for children, for minors to be in possession of a cell phone. And at that time, we would either write a citation, the phones would be confiscated, and the parents would have to come back up to the school to either redeem it, but they would definitely have to pay to get the phones back.
Wow. It's okay.
Now, let me ask you this.
Can I have something on that one? So I work at the alternative school, and we don't allow cell phones on our campus. They're not allowed into the campus. So can I tell y'all what we've experienced? They started putting them in the bushes, right? So they leave them outside. And so then they started turning on the sprinklers because now we know that they're outside. So then the kids got smart, and they started putting them in plastic bags. And then the kids got smart, and they started digging up, and they had little holes around our building, and they would put their cell phones inside of plastic bags, inside of the holes, almost to the point where you have to metal detect to go find these cell phones. Y'all, there's an addiction to these cell phones. I have it. Last night was enjoyable in Vegas not having my phone during the concert, but I wanted my phone unlocked as soon as it was able to be unlocked. Y'all, we have to, that's a whole nother topic on a whole nother day. But that, the technology piece, you can't stop it. We're going to have to teach them. And the notes, somebody mentioned about the notes, pass the notes. I think that was you, Travis. You know what happened when the teacher caught the note? They were able to pull you to the side and have a talk. You like little Susie? Right? You like little Susie? We had a conversation, and we had connection, and we had communication about how you need to talk to little Susie and how Susie wants to be talked to. And then we talked to Susie about how Travis liked little Susie, right? And we started having conversations with children in first, second, third grade about what it means to like a little boy and a little girl and how we're supposed to act and how we're supposed to teach and train ourselves. Y'all, we don't teach our kids anything. We just think that they're supposed to pick it up by osmosis. It's like, as a parent, do you know that you're an educator? Every single thing that you do, you are teaching and training all the time, whether you like it or not. Your child is a sponge, and they're picking up everything. 90% of what kids pick up is by five. We literally are picking up everything constantly, and yet everybody wants to say, I don't know how that happened. You're not communicating. Have you talked to your kids about what it means to date? Have you talked to your kids about what it means to sex? Do kids know that if two underage children exchange inappropriate pictures, they both have committed child pornography? Do they know that those things are real? Do you know that you can't have consensual sex with a person who is under the influence of drugs and alcohol, even if it, you think it's consensual in the state of Texas? Do they know these things? See, there's a lot of stuff out here that we love to know about our technology, but nobody's really seems, and where I'm sitting, to be focused on the right thing. You're worried about things that don't really matter. Can we focus on the things that do?
When I got caught, she just looked at it and told me to go to the office. I mean, that was just get out of my, go to the office because, like I said, that was texting.
Right, but if we roll it to today, and I mean we can talk. The school has become really the playground for predators. And it has become that playground because the teachers have become slaves to the emotions, needs, and their own hearts and desires for the better welfare of the children, where oftentimes the administrators are worried about politics and making money and keeping their position. The parents don't care because, here we go, the school, the American school, has become daycare in the day for a lot of parents. And at night, when the school closes, guess what? We got these mobile daycare providers called the police. We don't want the teachers to correct our children. We don't want the police to correct our children. We're never home to correct them. And we wonder why the kids are out of pocket. You know, we raise a lot of our young men. Now, I have seen this. Some of these men will tell the little boy, we don't let our children be children anymore. You know, when I grew up, girls played with dolls, guys did G.I. Joes, cat pistols, whatever. But being allowed to be a child is going to make you a better parent. But what I see nowadays is men telling their five-year-old, be a man, be a man, be a man. Then when the child acts like a man, the same dad says, stay in the kid's place. So the kid is going, where the hell am I supposed to be? What do you want from me?
It's okay, Stan. It's okay.
You know?
Wow.
This is the side that we have to take. As Carla said, I agree 100%. I've heard that a lot of times. I ain't going to never raise my kids the way my mom, I ain't never beat on my kids the way my daddy beat me. First and foremost, I don't think your daddy beat you. I really think that it was an instructive type of prep. I don't think there's a difference between spanking a kid and child abuse.
But Travis, let me ask you this. You got an unruly, disobedient. This is a word we don't even, they might as well have stricken this out the English language because nobody ever uses it anymore. Disobedient child that has an iPhone 13, 15, or whatever iPhone is out. Air Jordan 56 or whatever version is out. Privileging power around the house. Disobedient. We reward disobedience. And then we want to get upset. We got them in the stroller, pushing them around with the cute little Air Jordans on them. Because it's cute, because they only cost $10.50. Now they're 2 years old, 3 years old, and them same Jordans cost $50. And we think it's cute when they look at a woman, they go, look at that bitch. Oh, he's so beautiful, he's so cute. We applaud that. Then now he's 15 and calls you that. Now you got all kind of issues. You built this. You built this.
And made that monster, yeah.
I have kids who fall asleep. I have elementary children who fall asleep in the morning in my classroom. Elementary children are falling asleep in my classroom. So I say, what time did you go to sleep last night? I don't remember, man. You're in fourth grade, third grade. What do you mean you don't remember what time you went to sleep last night? You don't have a bedtime? I'm on my tablet. Oh, okay. So we talk about it. Tablet until 3, 4, 5 o'clock in the morning. My parent comes up. Hey, I want to talk to you about it. He fell asleep this morning. We were able to get him up, but I wanted to talk to you. He says he's not sleeping at night because he's got a tablet. Oh, yeah, he stays on his tablet all night. You don't see a problem with this? He's eight.
Well, the, The tablet is the babysitter.
I'm telling you, the problem is not the disciplinarians. The people who are going to whoop their children are whooping their children. Okay, let me just tell you, if you spank children, you're spanking your kids, whether society tells you to or not. If you don't, and you don't believe in that discipline, there's a very good chance that you're not believing in other types of discipline either. So the problem is not about just do something. Can you tell a kid that, no, give me the tablet. Why are you at the alternative school? You've been kicked out of your school for behavior, and yet you still have technology. How is that even possible? And I tell parents that. Why does your child, in front of the child, why does he still have his technology? He's been kicked out of school. And you know that 9 times out of 10, that parent will look at me and be like, she's right. Give me that tablet when we get home. It took me to tell them that they needed to take that tablet away. There's not anything inside of you that said you got in trouble. Y'all, I gave all the things I could to my stepson so I could take it away.
You know, that's...
If he earned it, he got it. The minute he lost it, it was snatched away. And he knew it. He knew, and the things that mattered to him, I learned very quickly, and he learned very quickly, and that's how we disciplined all through school. That's what we did. It's not a perfect system, but do something.
You know, Dr. Cruz...
He should not be running the asylum, I'm sorry.
No, I had a call one night, and it was... Unfortunately, a typical call, 3:30 in the morning, 65, 70-year-old grandmother raising grandchildren because mom was either incarcerated or whatever. I get there. Kid call, 911. She whipping me. So I get there. The house is a wreck. Nobody's picked up nothing. I flash back. I grew up. That would never happen. So I get there, and the little kid's there, and I asked the grandmother, man, what's going on? Talk to him. He called. So I looked at him. I said, why'd you call? Man, she bitching at me, man. I just come in the house, man. And, you know, I was at a party. 13. I was at a party, which was a little kid dance that was over at 10. He ain't coming in until 3:30. And grandma tore him up. I said, okay. I said, grandma, what's going on? I can't do nothing with him. I don't know what to do. Whatever mama's situation was. So I said, okay. I said, where's his room? She pointed. I said, give me a trash bag. She gave me a trash bag. I walked in that room. Xbox, E-box, Y-box, PlayStation. All everything that plugged into a wall, I came out with in a trash bag. I said, ma'am, take this to the pawn shop tomorrow, and you pawn it, and you go get your hair and your nails done. He's got a lamp in there and a book. Guess what? That's what prison gives you, light and a book. And you make him earn everything back. I said, now, he says that you beat him. Where is the belt? She went and got it. It was some little old flimsy whatever. I said, okay. I said, are you the guardian? Yep. I said, well, go ahead and finish while I'm here so I can make sure no crime is committed. 4 years later, that kid graduated from Prairie View A&M, and never forgot that night I came there. Well, not 4 years later, but eventually he contacted me 4 years ago. But he graduated Prairie View A&M. To him, most in his whole life was that moment, that incident, that thing. That's the difference that we can make.
They fight you on it, Sam, but it's how you make them feel safe. Mm-hmm. Structure and discipline is how children feel safe. If you want kids to stop bringing guns to school, make them feel safe at school. If you want teachers to stay in the classroom, make them feel safe in the classroom. We don't feel safe. Nobody feels safe in these schools. Have you walked into a school lately that's bigger than a 2A, 3A school? Walk into a school and see how you feel. It doesn't feel safe. And I told y'all last time, our brains and our amygdalas register that, and we react. We have to create safe environment, and that comes from, you know, that there's a consequence when you do that. You don't, you know what I use in my classroom all the time? We don't do that here. We don't talk like that here. I don't know how you do it at your other school, but we don't do that in this classroom. It's a very simple boundary. Don't do that. I don't like that. I don't like it when you talk like that. It's really simple. It's that simple. When you tell someone, I don't like it when you talk to me like that, don't talk to me like that. It's now registered. They either have to do what you said or do what you didn't say. And now you have a clear path either way. If they do what you ask, we're good. If they don't, now you know that there's a consequence that needs to happen. That's not happening. People aren't using words to set boundaries. We're not creating safe environments. And then we're getting exactly what you can expect from an unsafe environment.
Hey, man, real quick, because I got to get John in.
Oh, go ahead, then. Go ahead.
Yeah, Big John, good morning. Welcome in. Come on, brother. I don't know if you've been listening, but it's been on.
Yeah. I think the greater problem before you get to the discipline is getting to the relationship between the parent and the child. There seems to be a best friend type of thing going on versus being a parent. And then when it comes time to discipline, it's confusing for the child to accept that discipline from the parent. And often some of the parents themselves are confused and how should they discipline the child. You just sat there and smoked weed with your child. You just sat there, you drink beer, you party. Teach your kids how to dance dirty, and you teach them the latest dirty dances and all this, and now you want to discipline them when you feel like they did something wrong. But the whole time, you've been teaching them wrong. So I think before we really look at the discipline, because the discipline in itself is a danger game. It's dangerous because, as Travis was touching on, too much can be abuse. Not enough can be an acceptance. Where's the balance at in it? And also, I want to hear from the Professor Joe. He's going to jump on me for this one. But there were parents who put their kids on timeout, right? What is prison but timeout? So even in that, you have to be careful how you discipline your child on timeout. Here are dudes that I was locked up with that was immune to anything that DOC was going to do to him. He said, oh, we're going to put you on lockdown. And Travis worked inside DOC. He doesn't see these dudes who don't mind going to SAG and staying inside segregation for 2 and 3 years. It's no joke. I've been in lockup for 90 days, and they fed you under the door. I'm talking about being on solitary confinement where you don't even know the time of the day, and they slide to school, and they feed you what they call a loaf, which is all your meals at one time, and they slide it under the door. Some people are immune to it, and I wonder, did it start at their childhood? This is my thoughts.
But the prison system is a whole nother topic that I could get on and talk about. That could be a whole show if y'all want to do that. But simply, I worked in courts too, and I had a guy come in. He was accused of child abuse. Let me tell you what happened. His daughter would actually leave the house every morning to go get on the bus. She would divert her direction, go to one of her girlfriend's house. They would all get together at another girlfriend's house. They would change clothes, put on these slutty outfits, and they would go to the mall and pick up dudes and have sex with them. So dad didn't know what was going on because the principal or somebody had called him and told him, so he decided to follow his daughter. And he did. He followed his daughter. All of them, they got in the car, and I guess the pimp was pimping them or whatever they were doing. When he found out that he did go overboard, he beat the living daylight out of that girl. That was his daughter. But what made it sad more than anything in the courtroom was his own wife testified against him. He wound up getting 18 months locked up, and he had got a restraining order, a TPO, where he couldn't go anywhere near his daughter. And she didn't want to have anything to do with him, and the wife didn't want to have anything to do with him, and the wife eventually divorced him. Now, this is what I'm talking about right here. If I caught my daughter doing something like that, I don't believe I can hold back my rage either. Because my 13-year-old daughter is out prostituting because she wants these things that mommy and daddy will not get her, so she decides to go get it on her own. Once again, an adult decision. Adult decision.
Well, I just got to say that I think we came askew of what the topic was.
However, I have a question.
So please, go for it, Izzy. Go for it. What is the question?
I have a question. So I just, first of all, I'd like to go on record and say that there's just too many people reproducing in this world. off the break right there. I think more people want to have children than want to raise children, and I think that that is a mindset that is promoted by our society and culture. So we got to take that into account. But I want to know. I think the punitive metaphors rolling in about talking about raising a child, I find very funny. We've used the metaphor about prison for raising a kid, which. Great, because the prison system is just doing a crackerjack job of improving our society. The hitting of kids is a debatable point, but I think the moment that you feel as a father that your response to your child doing something you don't like, a calibrated response is to beat the shit out of that kid to the point where you wind up in jail. I think there are more problems there than the kid, really. And I don't see why. I feel like there's like a, in our society alone, the punitive mentality that we have, what positive things from like has it yielded for our society in like a, just in a weighted sort of way? Like, we've been doing punitive and corporal forever, before we're at, to a certain degree. Like, and I'm hearing things saying that, like, it sounds like, oh, if we just hit them harder, then it'll work. If we just beat them down harder, then it'll work. If we just deprive them of daylight and time and freedom, it'll work. It's not working. On any level, it's not working. On any scale, it's not working. It doesn't work. And I don't know why we keep thinking that the more we do it or the harder we do it or maybe the right angle we do it at, it'll finally click, as opposed to trying something different. If your daughter is prostituting herself, there are more complex problems there than she just wants things. And if your response to your daughter prostituting herself in righteousness is to beat the shit out of her, there are more problems there than anything that you're dealing with. And nothing about that situation solved the thing. If that guy wound up in jail because he beat the shit out of his daughter to the point where he needed a restraining order and wound up in jail, that guy should have a restraining order and be in jail. You don't get to just beat the shit out of your kid because you think you don't, literally you don't understand anything that's happening in the situation and get to claim it as some sort of righteous, retributive.
But Izzy, you bring a good point, but let me say this. Then what do we do on many of these middle class, I don't give a damn, black, white, whatever, insert color here, middle class neighborhoods where the schools are shitty because the politicians don't care, put no money into schools. The teachers are on welfare. I know teachers who are getting public assistance and taking some of their welfare stuff to school for snacks for kids. That's real talk. So the system doesn't give a shit about the men and women who are trying to teach these kids, okay? They don't give a crap about the parents because they make them take off of their job at McDonald's or Whataburger or anything else to go sit for 8 hours to get an appointment with Mr. or Mrs. So-and-so. They got nothing more than a nameplate and are just barely above middle-class salary. So they're losing money there. Then they string them out for 3 or 4 years. Mental health for some of these kids, as Dr. Corsi has alluded to, is non-existent. You got to jump through so many damn hoops to get it, and then what is the society's answer? Give them a pill. Give them a pill. Then tell that parent, you deal with it. I'm not disagreeing with you. But you bring up a very interesting point, because I'm saying what worked for me and my generation. It's not that we're perfect. But at the same time, I'm saying I could go. We didn't have to wait 3 weeks to get a dental appointment. We didn't have to wait, 4 weeks to see a counselor. You know, we didn't have to go broke because the school district mandates you got to see a counselor. Come on,
Chief. Hold on. I think there's some problem. There's a little bit of a dangerous sort of idealized narrative about the generational thing, my generation. That narrative is very idealized because there were people in your generation that weren't getting any of that.
Sure, there were. But
the entire generation.
No, you're right. But that's great. That's a nice cushy feeling. But let's look at some facts. My generation wasn't carrying guns to school and shooting up the school. My generation wasn't going into the nightclubs and killing everybody else because I'm not gay, but they are. My generation wasn't doing you can frown, but it's a fact. You may bring up an isolated incident, but these kids today kill within
1975 and talk to me about shootings in clubs and public streets.
Okay, you named one place in one geographic area. I'm talking about a nationwide problem. When we went to school, we might have hit under the desk because there might be a nuclear attack.
It's an idealized notion to say that your generation didn't experience violence.
It's not idealized, Izzy.
The largest crime rate in the world, in the country.
It's not idealized. It's factual. Bring up...
Something changed. I mean, and look, I have a tendency to agree with Izzy, you know, because not everybody in our generation had their ass whooped. I mean, I had it. I have a lot of friends that had the fear, right? Mm-hmm. And it was about what Dr. Kurz said about accountability and consequences for the actions. But I think we're missing the point is there is no accountability or consequences for actions. Whatever form that takes. You know, her example, the kid with an alternative school with the technology, there should have been a consequence as it relates to that for being kicked out of school. And I think that's where we need to take the topic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and again, something changed in this country. And I'm not smart enough to tell you exactly what it was, but when I was in high school in Texas, there were guns on campus. They were in gun racks sitting in the back of people's pickup trucks in the parking lot. And at the end of the day, they would go out to whatever unincorporated area. They'd go with the coach or the ag teacher, and they'd go dove hunting. So there were guns on campuses, and I think we forget that we had that. So something in society changed because there it was, and I can almost assure you that 90% of those trucks where they had those shotguns in there weren't locked. So somebody did want to go by and create some mayhem. They just grab her off the rack and walk right into the school. So we have this shift and we have this change in society across the nation, and again, there's not a single thing to say that's why this has changed. It's a bunch of stuff that has changed throughout the years. It's about not holding people, in my opinion, not holding people accountable for the things that they do. We've lessened some of this. We're at fault too because we're the latchkey kids,
mm-hmm.
right? So, I mean, you know, legitimately, my parents both worked. I didn't see them till 7, 8 o'clock at night in most instances. My brother and I were on our own.
But you weren't making pipe bombs.
I don't care about anything. You know, we have that idea that, you know, so we've perpetuated some of this. So we're not without fault on this situation. I can assure you.
Right.
That.
But, Chief, you weren't making.
I go back to the parent-child relationship in my world. Not that it happens all the time, but when you try to hold the child accountable for something, now we're having to argue and fight with the parent because they were never held accountable. And I know Dr. Kurz. I know Dr. Kurz has explained that. So, so I think this is, you know, I don't know if it's beyond us to say exactly what happened because there's a bunch of theories and probably some facts that can say why the things have changed that they have. But bottom line is there are rules. And people need to be held accountable for whatever those rules are, and that's it. And we sidestep when your child smokes dope, as Travis says, in the corner, and then we get an argument with the parent because they don't think it's that big of a deal. Well, damn it, it's a rule at the school.
Right, but
the school thinks it's an issue.
But when we
so hold you accountable for that.
Right, but see, that's the word right there, accountable. My generation. My generation, yes, Izzy, I'm going to talk about my generation. My generation was accountable. If I screwed up, my ass got paddled, I got suspended, or I couldn't go off the porch. There was a punishment. And I think today we have become our children's, not their parents, where the our kid can be absolutely 1,000% out of bounds, and we'll go in and cuss out Dr. Corsi, a doctor who has more knowledge and understanding kids than some of these parents do, but we'll go, how dare you put my son in the corner? He's humiliating. He's this. He's that. We have made these kids, we have covered up for not making them accountable, the chief said, accountable. Then we want to get bitchy and mad when the legal system holds them accountable.
And that,
go ahead, Joe.
And that's all of us. I'm going to let you talk in.
Right.
That's all of us. That's the judicial system, the law. That's every system that's in place that
exactly.
has lost this mode of accountability. And that's, you know, I think it's all of us. It ain't his generation. It certainly is not my generation. It's the system in place that has dumbed down this accountability because we're worried about hurt feelings.
And we don't vote. Go ahead, Joe.
Here's the thing.
Go ahead, Joe.
I think that the issue, at least in my mind, somewhat as he says, again, he and I go at each other quite a bit, and today won't be any exception. The fact remains that somewhat as he says is correct. There is a romantic idea of spankings or whatever else. However, there's a difference in accountability and consequences. Consequences, if we look at it, we look at the term in terms of ideals, accountability is an adult term. Consequences apply more to a child. If we look at what has not applied to the child, I said spankings were consequences of bad actions. Now, that doesn't mean that you, forgive my romanticized terms of beating the bricks off of somebody, but the fact of the matter remains, you weren't accountable. You had consequences for your bad actions. Now, to John's point, you know, I've got friends who smoke with their kids, all that, and now they want to discipline when the kids are exactly like John said. I'm not in my house. The way this generation was raised, your parents weren't your friends.
Mm-hmm.
But you had consequences for your actions. For instance, my sister, I'm sure you, anyone that's got family, I did some bad stuff to my dog, my sister's toys, and I had to pay the consequences for poking her eye out, for putting in the G.I. Joe thing. But those were consequences. Accountability came when I had to work with other people. Am I accountable when I go to school? Yes. Are there consequences? Yes. Are they two separate and distinct things? Yes, there are. But let me just throw one more issue out here. In the shooting since 82, the shooter showed prior signs of mental health issues.
Mm-hmm.
Since 82, they've had these stats. We have not addressed that. Now, when we go back and put that to a bigger scheme of things, let's go back and talk about the real issues. We've got problems with mental health in this country.
That's right.
When we talk about these kids, when we talk about accountability, we talk about all these other issues, consequences, look at the mental health issues that go along with it. These kids aren't acting up because they got hit by some strange ray. They are acting up because, again, are they accountable? Are the consequences of their action? Plus, what does society say? If you look at these rap videos, I'm a badass because I got a gun. I'm a badass because I'm driving a Bentley at 12. I'm smoking weed. So where is the accountability? Where is the rest of these issues? But again, I go back to a very basic point. We got to look at mental health. Everything we'll talk about pertains to mental health.
Mm-hmm. And social services. I'm agreeing with you on that. And social services. That's a key point of this conversation. Because not everything is going to require a psychologist visit, right? There are other avenues to send somebody that way, and that falls under the social services area. If we deplete those, then you know we're just spinning our wheels with the same issue. And I personally think that's a big part of why we are where we are.
And Chief, I would say a caveat. Yeah, I agree, social services, but I would add behind it, comma, or the lack thereof. Because in many of these schools that are challenged and neighborhoods that are challenged, there is no convenient access to social services. So I'm not disagreeing with you.
There's no convenient access to social services anywhere. I mean, and even mental health. I was going to tell you, you know, we've had an issue on a specific individual. We've been sitting on this or sat on this person for 2 days.
You're reading my mind.
Mental health.
You're reading my mind.
I want to go back to, we always talk about civics. You know, we talk about, you know, teaching these things. You know, we need to drop back a little bit and quit worried about, you know, teaching certain things and teach people how to do their taxes and be respectful and vote and, you know, all these things that needs to be put back in school too. That goes hand in hand with
civic
accountability and consequences too.
Yep.
Real quick, John. Yes. Another thing to look at is that the parents knew how to be parents, and the neighborhoods helped raise the children. We was a community. The grandmothers was involved, but now you got grandmothers that are 35, 36 years old,
mm-hmm.
and she don't want nothing to do with the grandchild. She basically said, "Well, I raised mine, so I ain't gonna be raising nobody else's kids." Those are not the grandmothers that we came up under. Now, the reason why I said that the real danger and discipline thing is because here's the thing. We are a violent nation. We got to admit it. We are a violent nation.
Amen.
To giving out spanking, teach our children that's the way to respond when someone does something that you dislike or upset you. So that's the reason why I said that there has to be, it's a thin line with this.
John, we value aggression in this country.
Yes.
We value aggression. If someone is aggressive, we see them as a great leader. If somebody comes in and takes over a room or can cut somebody out or can, you know, proverbial snatch them out of the net, we see that as somebody who's powerful, and we see that as something that's positive. And when you couple that with discipline, we talk about, like, corporal punishment and that sort of thing. If you're operating out of anger, you're already lost.
Mm-hmm.
If you're spanking your child when you're angry, there's your problem. Just don't spank when you're angry. If you're going to discipline a child, you're supposed to be disciplining and consequencing because you made a choice that now has a consequence, right? You should know, number one, that their consequence is coming before the behavior happens if you're doing it right. They need to know that there's a consequence, right, and what it should be. And then you need to follow through with it. But you cannot do it when you're angry. And what we have is a reactionary society where if I feel something, then I'm justified.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't allow it because, oh, well, she was angry. Y'all, anger is a secondary emotion. It's a choice. And if you're operating out of anger, then you are making a decision to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the consequences that come from that are yours. They're not anybody else's. We love to blame everybody else, but nobody wants to accept and own it for ourselves. And that's what I teach children how to do. Did you do that? Yes. Should you have? No. Did you like it when he did that? No. Tell him. I didn't like it when you called me that name. Did you hear him say he didn't like it? Yes. What's your plan for next time? Y'all, this is a conversation that we do. I do this with five-year-olds. Yeah, we have adults who can't accept responsibility for any of the choices that they've made because they blame it on their feelings and their emotions. Type of personal control. It's easy to blame everybody else. It's super hard to accept responsibility. But if everybody takes personal responsibility for their own children, their own homes, their own communities, their own schools, if everybody does that, we fix the problem. But as long as I'm looking to you or everybody's looking to Dr. Behavior to fix it, I'm not there every day to solve it. You created this problem. You're going to have to do something new to change it. And until we're willing to do that, we're going to keep spinning our wheels because everybody's waiting for somebody else to come and fix the problem they created.
In our society, we promote individualism over the collective.
Collective.
And we've brought this up before. We keep using that reference of it takes a village. That is a metaphor that we do not utilize in Western education. That's actually something that we destroyed because that was a practice of indigenous populations, and it wasn't created. Take the village conversation was indigenously created, and that's what a lot of restorative justice practices now are based on. It wasn't inherently punitive. Everybody was involved. The reason we can't make that work is because Western society came in and destroyed that.
Amen.
That's our Western education.
Damn.
Yeah.
I can tell you what Western civilization also destroyed. Another metaphor. Fear of God. Fear of God.
No, I think we brought that in real hard.
Yeah.
You brought it in right back out.
Yeah.
It didn't work because nobody fears anything anymore. That's why we have the murder rates the way we have school shootings are going on. Number one, just so you know, this young man is going to shoot this school up. They're going to try him as an adult, but he's going to go to the county jail. He's going to be separated from the adult because he's a kid. But he still committed an adult crime, and you're charging him as an adult. You convict him, you're not going to give him the death penalty. Let's go ahead and put that on
paper.
He's going to go to prison for the rest of his natural life until he turns 18. They're going to put him in solitary. He's going to stay there the whole time for his safety because he's a child. We're still pampering him.
But Travis, I would submit, for, and this is Stan, the whole fear of God concept, I'll throw that out because I'm a Christian, but I would prefer that God not be in my laws as man institutes them. I am sick and tired of everybody who runs for office and says what they believe because they are evangelical Christians. Get it out.
Okay.
Get it out. Render unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's. Okay, if we're dealing with society's issues, we have to understand that not everybody in society is Christian or Muslim or Jew. Some are atheists. Some are agnostic. Some don't know what they are. So, I mean, I think for me, to that, the fear of God, these kids don't have a fear of God. They don't even know who God is because the church is on the corner and it's never open. Because the only time...
And I,
Charles, can I say something?
On the opposite side, I think people are afraid of everything. What my experience is, the reactions that you're getting is because everybody's afraid of everything. I'm afraid. I was afraid. I was afraid. The police, I was afraid. Mm-hmm. The person, I was afraid.
Here we go.
I was afraid. Everything was fear. If you think about it, everything is fear-based. Everybody's afraid of everything. And it's all you have to do is say, I was afraid. I feared for my life. And we're like, oh, okay. That's fine.
But you know what, Doc? But what they're always, the common denominator in within what you said, yes, they're afraid, but of what? It's always that which is different. They're gay. I'm straight. I'm scared.
We talk about mental health.
Yes.
Fear is your brain. It's primitive. You don't get to pick fear.
Thank you.
Your experiences and your environment teach you what to be afraid of. That's how we, this is my point about schools. We have unsafe environments at schools. People come to school afraid. Teachers, administrators come to
tell
school
you why.
Afraid. And they react out of fear. Their emotions and their decisions are based on fear. And every bit, this is what you're getting. This is what we look like when we have a fear-based society. Everybody's reactionary. Mm-hmm. Nobody's proactive. Mm-hmm. Everybody reacts. And then it's at the expense of everyone else as long as I'm okay and I'm safe. And
there
I feel okay. And this, to me, is the foundation. It's about every bit of what I'm doing professionally right now. It's about teaching people how to get control of your own emotions, take responsibility for your own self, and get control of your own accountability and your own decision-making so that nobody else has to. If we all take on that personal responsibility, my book is called The 21st Century Human, Cool, Calm, and Connected. It will hopefully be out in 2022 soon. Cool, calm, and connected, because imagine a world if that's how we live.
Do I get an autograph copy?
We're reactionary.
Do I get an autograph copy?
Absolutely.
I'm going to buy five, but I want one from you. Let's do this, because we're at the 31-minute mark. And we've pretty much vented and hashed out how we all feel, varying generations here. And I think we brought out a lot of good stuff. For whatever reason, Facebook cleared everybody out of the live. I'm not surprised. The live is still going. They just can't get into it. But I'm going to keep the live going so that we can put it back up later. You know, I'm so tired of social media and how they pick and choose what to cut off from people because we might be a little too bright for them. But let me ask you this, Dr. Corsi. Because you're probably, we can all have our personal experiences, but you're the most qualified here on this panel. And I don't just want you, when you answer, not just kids, because we got a lot of adult kids. And we got a lot of adult kids with a little thing around their neck that says Reverend, a gun and a badge that says cop, a nameplate that says Senator, Congressman. Take all that in. How do we begin? Because we can't fix it right now. We're not even in the fixing stage. We're not even, we haven't even recognized there's a problem. How do we get there? What's your advice? Talk to us.
It's Dr. Philism. You got to accept that there's a problem, right? Own it. Acknowledge that there's a problem. We acknowledge that there's a problem, but in the same breath, we turn around and point fingers at everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
And I love having these conversations, but I'm sick of having these conversations because everything I do is action-based. If you come to a training, it's strategy-based, right? I don't teach you theory. I teach you theory to understand why I'm about to teach you how to say it this way. Everything we do is role play in my training because exactly what y'all said before, if you never practice the right way, you're never going to know how to do it, right? You can learn it, but if you never actually do it, I think what we have to do is we have to own it. We have to own the fact that we have personal responsibility in this. Personal. It's not, I don't care if you're 70 years old, you don't have children, you don't have grandchildren, you live in a neighborhood. If you see a child, two children who are outside arguing, come outside and say, is there a problem? Hey, are y'all okay? At some point, we have to own our own environment. I made a decision that I like to feel safe everywhere I go, so I conduct myself in safe ways. The way I communicate with people, the way that I connect with people, I'm safe. That's my personal accountability and responsibility. I don't look to anybody else to create a safe environment for me. I do it for myself. I think that that's what we have to do. The number one thing I'll tell parents of school-age children, if there is a meeting about your child, you better be there.
Amen.
I don't care if it's by phone. I don't care if you have a fax signal. You better figure out a way to be there. If you don't care enough about your child to show up to a meeting about their academic progress or behavior progress, why would you expect their teachers and administrators to care more than you? I get work happens. I get it. Work with the administrators. Can we do it after? Tell them when you're available. I've done 7 o'clock meetings at night. For a mother who had to work, but she wanted to be a part of the meeting. We did it at 7 o'clock at night. Y'all, you have to be involved. You have to own it, and you have to take personal responsibility. We have to stop blaming everybody else.
Let me do this, because Dr. Cruz, you're going to get the last word. You know I'm going to close you out. You up in Vegas anyway, so, you know, we're going to give you. You took time out for us. Not a lot of people would do that. I can't say I would have. But, you know, we're going to give you the last word. But let me drop down. Travis, final thoughts, brother. How do we fix this?
I'm going to say something that contrary to what everybody's saying, and I know this is going to shock a lot of people and it's going to push you in another direction, but and this is directed at Izzy. I haven't had the opportunity to interact with you a lot, but like Joe said, I think that you and I are going to become good friends on this panel when I start coming. But I'm going to say this. And try to make it as clear as possible, and I want you guys to listen to what I say. Anger gets shit done. I know y'all gonna sit here and tell me, nah, I don't agree. Don't just hear what I said, and then have your stuff ready for the next time we decide to do it. I know it's gonna be a long conversation, but it gets stuff done. It makes change for better or for worse. It gets stuff done. That's just the way I feel. That's it for me.
All right, let me see. Big Chief, come on, wrap us up. Tell me something. What are you thinking? How do we deal with this, Chief?
What Dr. Cruz said. No. So, I'm gonna say there's a section where I agree with Travis on the angers when we start teaching. People that get caught up in one of these environments shift your emotion to anger. And he's right. It does get stuff done, especially in those situations, but not all. But, you know, that's a biological, issue. That's where anger comes from. And I think people need to understand a lot about that and really start to do some research about what your body does during times of stress and anger. But everything Dr. Cruz said is 100%. We need to say we own it, that we are in charge of this. You know, when she alluding to the, if you're 70 years old and two kids are arguing out in the street and say, is there a problem? I do that. You know, hey, what are y'all doing? You know, and I guess that's just that type of personality to get involved. Now, a lot of people say, well, I'm not going to do that because I'm going to get shot and I can do this and I can do that. Well, true. But if you hold yourself, put yourself out there to deal with these problems, you're going to be okay. Because a lot of people do that. And we've done that throughout many years to deal with that. You know, again, this is a multifaceted, multi-pronged approach to deal with these specific issues, and not one section is going to solve the issues. I go back to the mental health component. I go back and talk about the parenting component, social services component. I believe is important. We lack a lot of that stuff here today, and so we've got to change that. We've got to change that ideology on
how we deal with these issues, own these things, hold each other accountable, and have consequences when you don't follow the rules or do the things that need to be done. That's it. Organizationally, it needs to happen. Individually, that needs to happen. You know, you can take a lot of this stuff into your own family. You can take it right now, right, and start holding people accountable and create consequences if you're not. I mean, just in my family unit, there are consequences for certain things. You know, for my children, and it's been that way. I've never laid a hand on any of my kids, and they're good kids, but they know that there's consequences for their actions if they're not doing what is put forth by myself and my wife as to what's to be a responsible, respectable adult or child, because I've got two adults and one child. So, you know, again, this is a long, hard topic to discuss, but nobody else is talking about it. So I'll just remind you about that. There ain't anybody else having this conversation except for us. So, you know, maybe if the major folks are listening, maybe y'all need to clean that wax out of your ear and pay attention to what we're saying, because I think everybody on this panel brings a lot of value on and factual information, not opinion, but factual information to the table on how to address these issues. But that, I'm done.
All right, Big John, a couple minutes, brother. Tell us your final thoughts. How do we fix it?
I think we have to be realistic with one another. We all come from different walks of life. Our approach to things are going to be different. You know, for those who, if I make a comment about, you know, if you don't correct it, the prison system, the judicial system, there's people, kids, will get 99 years. As Travis alluded to, and that child goes through a youth prison until he's 18, 19, and he goes to an adult prison, and he's in population. He's not in solitary confinement. He's in population once he become of age. So DOC will deal with your children. The judicial system will deal with your children if you don't take the time and deal with them. And that's just being real. And me, from my experience, being in the streets, as a guy who started his own drug operation and a guy who is a co-founder of one of the biggest gangs that come out of Connecticut, I was able to discipline these kids, and they accepted it. Why? Because I wasn't friends with nobody. And they even understood that even the kids that I grew up with, I didn't show favor to them for. If they was in violation of a rule, they got dealt with according to whatever our policies were. So how is it that a dude in the street can have that much respect from your children, and you as a parent, you don't have that same respect from your child because you want to be your child's friend? You haven't defined what your relationship is. And that's the bottom line, man. And we can't forget, when we talk about Aaron's stand, we also got to keep in mind what drugs have done and destroyed a lot of the fabric of the family as well. And this is the result of it. This is the result of a 13, 14-year-old having a baby. And her mother is 27, 28. This is the result. The grandmother don't know how to be the mother, be a mother. How do you expect the daughter to be a mother? Don't say, yo, tell the kids, yo, stop playing in the street. The mother's running over there, 15-year-old, cussing Joe out, calling him an old man, whatever, whatever. Don't say nothing to my kids. Yeah, we have lost a village raising a child. And that wasn't, what, 20-some years ago. I'm done.
I was going to tell you, I think it's very interesting that here's a guy that ran a gang and could discipline people, and they followed the orders. But we can't get a school district to do that. Just saying.
You know, I gotta, John, you bring so much that we need here that sometimes I just get humbled and I don't even know where to go from there. Izzy, how do we fix this, brother?
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, you're on the hot seat.
I'd say, stop cutting funding to education. Stop cutting funding to the National Association of Mental Illness. Stop cutting funding to social services. Repair our social safety net.
put more money into education, put more money into mental health and mental wellness, stop building prisons, because they don't work. And as far as, I mean, Alabama's building three new ones now after just tearing a bunch down. They have one of the worst prison systems in the country. And we mentioned earlier, we make that distinction between for-profit prisons, which I always find funny because it implies that, like, Rikers Island is a nonprofit. So they're all profit prisons, so stop building prisons. And that would probably be a good start. I think we have to abandon this punitive mentality that we have in this country towards fixing all of our problems. I don't think it's really done us any good. Hold politicians accountable because they all act like we don't have the money, but that defense budget keeps going up a few billion dollars every year. So there's money somewhere. That stuff would all probably be good. That would be my take on what we need to pick up stuff.
They go to AZ Wi-Fi kicking at the end. Well, we didn't lose you, brother. We had you in there. Big Joe. How do we fix it, bro?
I have to agree with everybody. I mean, particularly Izzy. But John hit it right out the park. Man. John's modality is the same modality that the mob used. They still use that mob. So it apparently education has come across in some other form or fashion, but it is come across. The reality is that everything that Izzy said, everybody just alluded to, is true. The fact is that as far as education in the world, we're probably last. We're first in prisons. I mean, I saw that the other day, and it's amazing how many people are in prison.
Incarceration.
That came out a couple of years ago that said by the year 2023, half the black male population in Florida is going to have a record of some sort. The fact that they could even make that type of prediction is scary. That being said, however, I agree with the doctor, and I agree with, again, John, everybody on there. We've got to fund the education. We've got to go towards mental health. If nothing else, mental health, at least for me. For those who don't know, I have been in a couple of shoots, and I've been in a shoot in a school. That would be another topic for another day. The school shooter syndrome, we've got to talk about, stay on it at some point. And I'm done.
You know, before I go to Dr. Cruz to take us out, I'm going to say this. Stan's opinion, don't hold anybody on this panel to what I'm about to say. This is my personal opinion. You know, 11 years United States Air Force Desert Storm vet. So don't be lighting up my Facebook with this anti-patriotic bullshit. Don't bring that here because I was there in the same. Okay? America has become a nation of cowards. We have more fears than we have commitment. We're afraid of, and I had to write it down because I'm not that smart. We're afraid, we have a fear of anything that's different than us. You're Muslim and I'm Christian. You're black and I'm white. You're gay and I'm straight. We're afraid of it. So we react and vote on that fear. We're afraid of change. What we're doing isn't working, but God forbid we try something different, we may be worse off. We're afraid of dialogue. I might learn something. Maybe what I've been listening to isn't right. We're afraid of political difference. I'm not going to listen to them. They're Republican. They're a Democrat. We're afraid of anybody who can impart some experience to us that can make us a better person. We're afraid of solutions because we see, I think America today, when it sees a solution, we go into our racial camps, our political camps, and we see if we go with this, what will I lose? Not what will I gain. What will I lose? And finally, America, you're afraid of people. Anybody that's different. We are a nation of cowards that walks around in a perpetual state of fear. We don't want to tackle these hard challenges. America used to. We don't today. And so that's my final out for what it's worth. And the last voice everybody's going to hear today is going to be Dr. Cruz, my special guest who came to me from Vegas today. Love you. Appreciate you. Come on, take us out of here.
I'm just going to talk briefly about leadership. Everybody wants a leader until leaders have to do what leaders have to do. And if you're going to step into a position of authority in any capacity, I'll specifically speak about schools since that's where we were, we cannot tell parents that they're doing a wrong job and us not do it right. So when we call parents in, and because their kids are acting up at school, we better have a solution or a plan if we're calling for parents to come help, right? Because they're coming into our environment. As a leader, it's my job to own that responsibility. And as a leader, I implore everyone to look at their leadership policy making and decision making and make sure that it is for the good of the collective and not the individual. Because we are losing our collective values because we are so focused on individual rights. And when you come into a school, that is a collective environment. And a collective environment has to be safe, and it has to have consequences, and it has to have boundaries, and it has to have all of those things. So as leaders in those places, it's your job to ensure that. The last thing I'll say about this is teachers are not social workers. Teachers are not social workers. I can teach teachers how to talk to children. I will not ever teach teachers how to counsel children. When we have trauma and abuse and neglect that is showing itself in behavior, we cannot expect ancillary and support services to fix it. It is as much of a health problem as cancer, diabetes, or anything else that would need attention. So we have to stop turning our attention away from the issue to blame everyone else for the issue while the issue continues to fester and burn. So that's what I'll say is leaders, step up. Own your responsibility, accept and earn that paycheck, and please start caring about the rest of us instead of caring about the individual's rights. Because when you come to a collective environment, your individual rights fall to the side for the better of the collective, and we have to make decisions that way.
All right. Well, Dr. Cruz, you know, I appreciate you being here, and with that, we're going to get out.
The Blue Curtain, Saturdays at 11 a.m. Eastern.
Viewer discretion is advised.
Have a good weekend, guys.
See you, Chief.
See ya.
Thanks, everybody.